The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 19th of April, 2021. On the podcast today, Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, discusses the £1.93 million strategic investment in the company by Graphene Lab. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talks about Echo Energy, Emerson, Ananda Developments, and also talks about Jose Mourinho being sacked from Tottenham. Plus, also, at the end of the podcast, two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see lots of other content. In fact, an article there on Gene Drive. There's one there on e-energy. There's then one there on infrastructure, and plenty of others. In fact, also, check out our COVID-19 index. Biggest rise today is Gene Drive, up just over 10% to 74 pence. Biggest faller, Hemogenix Pharmaceuticals, down 8% to 3.8. Check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. Pleasure to speak to you.
You too. And a bit of news out last week, £1.93 million strategic investment in Vesarion by Graphene Lab. So we'll talk about who they are and the deal and what it means further on down the road. Before we do, as always, Neil, I'd like to do this. If people haven't heard of Vesarion, can you explain what you're about, please?
Yeah, sure. So Vesarion is an advanced materials group that's pioneering the exploitation of graphene into lots of different products, everything from construction through to textiles. Very exciting time for this new industry. And we're at the very forefront. So that's what we do.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, so let's start off with the Graphene Lab. Who are they? Where are they based, Neil?
So this is a South Korean deal, Graphene Lab, we've been dealing with for a number of months now. Quite an interesting connection with the acquisition that we made late in December, where we purchased the assets and IP from Hanwha Aerospace. And Mr. Kwon, who runs Graphene Lab, was one of the original engineers that worked at Samsung, where the technology originally came from. So he knows all about the technology, he knows all about the plant and the equipment. He's been involved in it from day one almost. And he's having left Samsung and still got great ties with Samsung, he's set up his own company to pioneer the use of chemical vapor deposition graphene, pure graphene, for electronics applications such as sensors and the displays we find on our mobile phones and tablets. With the intention of substituting some of the more expensive, more difficult materials to manufacture with graphene. And so that's what we're doing with him. We're creating these materials in conjunction, in partnership, and we're providing the IP and the assets, and he's providing a lot of the knowledge and the experience that we haven't necessarily got within our business. And so it's a great relationship to be able to work together on.
Yeah, yeah. And so how does the deal work? So you're paying, they pay you a royalty, is that the case?
Well, the first thing is that they've made a strategic investment into our business. So $1.93 million in cash coming into our business, obviously less some costs, for the subscription of 4.280 million shares. And that makes them a significant shareholder. And as a result of that, they will be, involved in what goes on in our business. But more importantly, they're also taking a stake in our Vesarion Korea operation. You have to understand, setting up and running a facility in another territory is always difficult unless you have a lot of help. And you can understand and navigate the various government departments and things. So we've got that partner now in South Korea with Mr. Kwon and Graphene Labs. So he'll be involved in our graphene business in South Korea. And we'll also be involved in his business as well, because he's using our assets and our IP, and he pays for the privilege of doing that to be able to create the new products that he's already working on and hoping to launch very soon.
Yeah.
So for us, it's a great way of bringing everything together with a very experienced and trusted partner, someone who's worked for Samsung for a long time, and is now, you know, getting ready to IPO their business in South Korea, where graphene is a very hot commodity at the moment.
What is that? And the electronics field, I suppose, is, you know, it's quite a big area, isn't it? For potential for graphene is big there, isn't it?
Well, we have all of the big players are in South Korea there, Mr. Kwon has got great links and connections with those. Obviously, his experience at Samsung will be absolutely critical to us, and we'll be wanting to leverage that as much as we can. And that's an ideal application for the use of this technology. You know, if you take your average mobile phone now, it has more technology in it than we were using to get to the moon, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And, all of these things, these sensors, these displays, flexible transparency, stuff that can be built into clothing, etc. All of these things are stuff that Graphene Labs has been working on for a number of years, either at their previous companies or on their own. And that's a classic and ideal application of the IP and the assets that we've purchased.
Yeah, absolutely. And is this a one-off, or you likely to strike this kind of deal with other companies?
At the moment, this is the Graphene Labs have got an exclusivity over some of the patents. So, we've paid for those patents. Those patents still belong to us. We're allowing access to Graphene Lab to use those and some of the assets as well. And that is kind of exclusive for those bits in South Korea. But that doesn't stop us working in the US, in South America, China, Malaysia, Japan, etc. So this is all very much contained within South Korea and very limited for the number of assets that we acquired, just feels like a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. And how is generally, how's things going at Vesarion? What's happening? Anything? What are you most excited about at the moment, Neil?
I think, we're absolutely fixated and focused on the G-Scale project and the defense projects. Those are going very well. We've got some great guys joined us, which is helping increase our bandwidth to take on more projects. We're seeing, great success in terms of testing for those products in line with what we kind of told Innovate. And I'm delighted at the progress that the team's making in those areas, especially on things like textiles and concrete. We're seeing quite a lot of activity and interest in automotive, aerospace, and we're seeing graphene as an industry really starting to grow up and actually be taken seriously for what we believe will be a really transformational kind of a product in the future. So it's all about getting that testing done. It's all about getting those results from the laboratory into industrial applications and then scaling up all of those processes at the same time. So that's what I'm excited about at the moment.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, as always, Neil, if you can, three reasons why someone should add Vesarion to their watch list, please.
Sure. So the first reason I always think is our support structure that we've got in place, our connections with the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge, where we have laboratories based. The second thing is all about the testing and the progress that we've shown on these government-backed projects, both in defence and in construction and textiles, etc., through Innovate UK. And the last reason is I'm still a significant shareholder in this business, and as such, my aims and ambitions are all aligned with those of the investors as well.
Marvellous stuff. Neil, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Al?
Oh, Jus, it is a wonderful day. The sun's shining. Everything's good. Warmer days. But best of all, they've just sacked Mourinho. Thank God for that. Thank heavens for that.
Well, if people are not familiar, I'm a Tottenham fan. In fact, my father-in-law was down on the weekend and he was doing some building work for us. He's knocking a wall through. And I said, he's a season ticket holder. I said, how are Tottenham? He said, no good. He said, Mourinho's got to go. He's got to go, full stop. And, it doesn't seem to get on with the... As a manager, you're supposed to manage, aren't you? And he doesn't... I'm not a huge football fan, but I get the impression that he doesn't manage people very well.
No, he doesn't. And this is the thing. He's so arrogant. And I think what concerned me in the first place was that he was ever taken on after Pochettino, because the guy is divisive. He's run out of ideas. He failed the second time at Chelsea, and he failed abjectly at Man United. And if you can't succeed in uniting the players at a big club, which is what a manager has to do, then what are you going to do? You know, he's got the best football stadium arguably in the world. He's got a good squad of players, and he's bought one or two players in that have helped, but he's just divisive.
Yeah, it seems to me, right, if you're a manager, the stars are the players, right? And you've got to take a back seat and you've got to manage them, and they are the stars. I mean, obviously you're going to have a lot of egos there, because you've got a lot of superstars getting paid a lot of money. But he seems to want to be the star, doesn't he, to me? He wants to be the focus of the story, you know? And it's never his fault. He's always blaming players. I've said you should never do that. You should never blame players, publicly. Like that. That's an awful way to manage. That's so, like I said, so divisive. That's not managing. It's almost like he wants to be a player, I think, doesn't he? He wants the limelight rather than be a manager, you know?
Well, I think it was quite telling when Harry Kane was substituted. Harry Kane actually came off. He had a minor injury. We hope he's going to be okay. But he came off at the end of the game, and there was barely an exchange between the two. Now, normally, you know, your manager would be hugging you and sort of, you know, saying well done, you know, because he scored the two goals that kept us in that game, which we should have won. But there we go. Anyway, I won't get involved in that. That's the thing. He's just divisive. I'm concerned that Levy ever took him on in the first place, because the signs were so clear to see. And it doesn't matter what his track record is. It's what he's doing right now, or what he was doing up until he was taken on by Levy. And it was just a disaster.
Levy says, and he's closing it, Jose and his coaching staff have been with us through some of the challenging times. Jose is a true professional who showed enormous resilience during the pandemic. I don't think he's too professional. I think he's anything but that, really. Yeah. Who would you like next, then, Al? Who would you like to? Who's available? Who's going to, you know?
Well, there's the RP Leipzig manager, Julian Nagelsmann, who's supposed to be very good. And again, he's a young manager, and obviously Pochettino was came in as a young manager, back in, I think, 2013, 2012, and did a brilliant job. And, sadly, he got us a Champions League final. We didn't win, so that all the jokes about Spurs trophy room are still, as valid as ever. But he was just a feel-good manager and passionate absolutely about the club and the players. And that's what we need. We need a young manager that's got that passion, that can unite the team. He's got all the resources at his disposal to build a fantastic team. I mean, the only fly or cloud on the horizon in that regard is the announcement of this new European Super League, which Spurs have signed up to. And I don't think that helps football at all.
It must be a power play. I don't know much about football, but it seems universally unpopular apart with the teams involved, or the management teams involved,
That's it. It seems universally unpopular, and I think a lot of teams
Is it even popular with your dogs, I think?
Yeah, it's unpopular with the dogs. It's unpopular with everyone. But ironically, I think it could be popular for grassroots football, because a lot of the season ticket revenue, I think, will now be at risk going forward because of COVID and for other reasons. So the money that might have been spent on season tickets could well go right into grassroots football. So Seaford Town Football Club, you know, which is my local football club, may well see a surge of money coming in from a season, you know, for tickets, for games, for clubs, for sponsorship, because people aren't spending that money on their season tickets anymore.
Exactly, marvelous stuff. Okay, let's talk about some stocks now. What's up first?
Radio, wanted to talk about Echo Energy first of all. Echo Energy is an exploration company and a production company based in Latin America, primarily Argentina, and it's It's working to discover and develop multi-trillion cubic feet potential assets. And also oil assets as well. Argentina is a net importer of oil, gas, and liquid natural gas. It's a state aim of the government there to change that. And ECHO has a series of assets in the southeast of Argentina on the coast, in the Tierra del Fuego region, which of course extends into Chile. The area known as the Austral Basin, it's a flat, barren, and sparsely populated area, but it's rich in natural assets, including gas and oil. And in the Santa Cruz Sur area, ECHO has a series of producing gas fields, Carillas, Campo, Bremen, Oceano, Moyaiki, and Palomo Aiki. There are a range of gas wells, gas and oil wells, and also within that is a port called Punta Loyola, where oil is basically stored by the company and exported. And also there is a gas pipeline that runs up and down the country, so major gas pipeline known as the San Martin trunk line. So ECHO basically plugs into that. It has some exploration assets also in Bolivia, but there's no current news on those, so I'm not going to discuss those. It's really all about today. The company's gone through a complete change, and if you take a look at the chart and the performance, you'll see really the price started to move towards the end of December and plateaued out, and then of course toward the end of March really started to move. And that was for one reason only. The assets, the oil assets, have been steadily producing and have also provided plenty of cash inflow. Late last year, the company was also able to raise funds. It raised 700,000 0.3p, and then at the end of December there was additional demand based on the developments within the company, in particular a VAT status change. ECHO basically reclaimed $1.4 million from the Argentinian government in domestic income VAT. So it raised a further 850,000 sterling at 0.5p on the back of that. But we then come to some legacy issues, and one of the key legacy issues was a bond, a 20 million euro bond, it came to an agreement at the end of March to extend the maturity on that bond to May 2025, and for a one-off payment to the bondholders of 100,000 euros, there will be no further cash interest payments until May 2025. And that was voted on and approved. And so effectively it's cleared the balance sheet for several years and allowed ECHO to rebuild its balance sheet and rebuild the value within the company. Throughout this time, it's announced a series of contract wins of gas, two key gas contracts, were won in February at a major premium to spot rates. We have this morning had a production update where quarter one production is aggregate to ECHO of 152,000 barrel of oil equivalent, and of course that's the measurement for gas and oil production, that production included oil it represented a 24% increase in March over February, where the average production was 230 barrels of oil per day in March. The company also announced that a 23-kilometer pipeline, which is under construction, is being fabricated in Buenos Aires, and the installation for that is on track. It also announced a significant domestic oil contract sale of 8,800 barrels of oil at the port Punta Loyola that I mentioned, average gas sale prices are now $3.5 per MMBTU versus $1.3 in 2020. So the net result is what we're seeing is a big increase in production numbers, in the actual sale prices or the spot prices that the company can achieve in the market. And all this is backed, of course, by a clean balance sheet. So the cash that is coming into the company is being reinvested into other wells and bringing other wells back online at the Santa Cruz Sur. So the company is still very modestly valued, has a market cap of just 15 million sterling now, and I think with the developments this year, you know, what that will represent in terms of revenue to the company, that's roughly $2.5 million into the company from that production in the first quarter. There are certainly some very positive projections and outlook for the year, as outlined by the CEO, Martin Hull, who basically said that the benefits of the previous efforts are now being seen, and they are seeing ongoing strong local energy demand and pricing, which has led enable them to obtain premium seasonal pricing levels, and the outlook for that pricing is very strong going forward through the year. So in summary, the production rates are set to continue, and we're going to see more cash generation from the group going into the bottom line and developing the other wells that are waiting that are coming back on stream, and production will expand per se during the second quarter.
Okay, and how's the chart looking?
Well, the chart is looking very—it's looking very strong. I mean, we saw, as I say, the big increase end of March, early April, and that was on the announcement, of course, of the bond, being restructured and pushed back to May 2025. And since that time, the shares have traded between 1.2 and 1.9p. So currently at 1.2p at the bottom of that trend. So we've got the production numbers today. No doubt some investors will take time to absorb and analyze those, and then I think we can fully expect to see the price push on from here.
Mm-hmm. All right, stuff. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, so we're moving to Morocco now. It's a lovely part of the world. So this is a company called Emerson. Of course, Emerson EML is a potash company. So it's got a single project, which is the 100% owned Chemisset potash project in northern Morocco. And the company's gone through a number of steps to get the project to where it is now. It raised $6 million in 2018 at 3p, undertook a scoping study, metallurgy tests, and then really probably in terms of the company's ambitions in this area, it appointed former Sirius Minerals director Graham Clark as CEO in the middle of last year. And of course, Sirius Minerals was a huge disappointment to a lot of investors, as we know, but I think Graham Clark headed that up and has had a lot of influence on the way that the Chemisset project is developing. And looking at where they're based geographically, a lot of the potash mines are very remote in the world. Of course, just you'll know about Salt Lake Potash and its lakes in Western Australia, but it's still relatively remote in regard to getting the product to the port and shipping it off to the markets where it's required. And of course, potash is largely required to improve productivity in agriculture. As we go forward, the population increases, there's greater food demand, and of course, we need to importance of arable land producing crops is more important than ever. And what potash fertilizer does is basically generate greater productivity from a given area of land. So the Chemisset project It enjoys low infrastructure costs, and it's also sited about 130 kilometers from the port. Also has a very good road infrastructure around it, so it's easy to get the stuff out of the ground into the trucks and shipped off the port. It's a big project for the region too. It's estimated it's going to create, once it's up and running, 2,300 direct and indirect jobs, and will increase the local GDP per capita head of population by about 40%. So that's a significant increase for what is a predominantly a poor region. So The company's gone through, as I say, a series of stages. Earlier this year, it was the company announced that it had received a formal mining license for Chemisset, and said that on the back of that, construction would start Q4 2021. The company at the same time raised a further $5.5 million at 5.75p. So the value is really moving up now. We're seeing shares trading today as we speak at 5.8p, just over that. So it's very much put a floor under the share price. The company is also we're seeing today it's looking at a four-phase development plan, and it's reduced the upfront capex costs that were originally expected down to $254 million, and sees potential for the later phases to be funded from cash flow from sales, and of course that's from sales for muriate of potash, and of course sulfate of potash, and then of course other uses such as de-icing salt for the roads and so on. At phase four, is estimated this will have a net present value of $2.37 billion, and will be generating EBITDA of $491 million a year. Graham Clark has said on the back of this news that 2021 continues to be a pivotal year for the project. So, of course, we've got Graham Clark heading it up. Hayden Locke, who drove the project earlier in its evolution. And the company also brought James Kelly in, who's also chairman at Trident Royalties. He came in as chairman, and he's going to replace the outgoing Mark Connolly. So, the project is very it is nicely poised from an investment standpoint. If construction starts at the end of this year, then we can anticipate seeing early production based on this new four-phase plan, I think, early next year. So that will be very exciting indeed, I think, for shareholders in Chemisset or Emerson, which of course is the Chemisset Potash project owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you know, I'm a huge fan of more of resource stocks, all that stuff. Anything else you've got for me, Al? Anything else at all we can talk about?
Yes, I have. Just wanted to speak quickly about Ananda Developments.
Oh, yeah, I hold this. I don't know where I hold it, though. When it initially listed, I just decided to take not a lot, just a tiny bit amount of actually of when it first listed. And I'm not sure whether I think where my account is. I don't know where it is.
It's Aquis listed, of course. So
yeah, but I don't know where it went. Where I held my shares in them, I literally, I got to find out where they are. But talking about sort of, we'll get at this in a bit. But talking about sort of hot sectors, you see, the crypto had a bit of a sell off on Sunday.
And, yeah, it did.
I decided rather than keep my money in, because I've taken up my sort of cash allowance, my ISA, I mean my stock shares ISA, so I can't put any more. So I thought I got a bit of spare cash. Rather than keep it in the bank where it's only earning no interest, it's just boring, what I'm going to do is just get some exposure to crypto. So I bought 10 cryptos, and already one went up by 50%. So I just sold out that one and reallocated it. But I thought, do you know what? It's literally less than half of 1% of my entire portfolio value, ISA. So I thought, but it's good to, but do you know what? I guarantee I'll earn more interest in these cryptos than I will in a bank. You know, I know more volatile, but I think they're either waiting for a sell-off, and I don't. We may have another leg down. I don't know, but I think over the longer term, I'll get better return from these 10 cryptos than I will from my bank account. So, and it's just more fun. It's more exciting. You know.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is highly volatile. But yeah, you can pick it up on the dips, of course, particularly Bitcoin. And I think most of the providers now do provide. I mean, the Mode app, for instance, provides a Bitcoin jar where if you hold, I think it's several thousand pounds of the Bitcoin, then you will start to receive you receive 5% interest on that per annum.
Wasn't a queue for a plug for Mode, Al?
No. I've just got a Mode app. That's all.
I'm looking at my Coinbase account, right? And I've got Coinbase, I'm holding one of these companies called Algo. You know, it's called.
Yeah.
And they pay you 6% to hold it. So yeah. I'm watching lifetime rewards go up, and literally 23 pence I've earned since yesterday on that.
Yeah,
so it's counting up. It's showing me in tiny digits. It's counting up by 23 point is a pound 0.23492578910. That's counting up. So earning some cash on that. That's good, that isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think a Coinbase account, you know, obviously you can store all of your crypto and that, but I think where you're getting interest on holding crypto, it beats the banks hands down. So I think a lot of investors that would never have considered crypto and, you know, would say it's too volatile otherwise, will see what they're going to get from the banks and say, do you know what, I'm going to stick it into this. And I think also with the new Open Finance Initiative now too, it's so easy to move your money in and out of your bank into a crypto account. It's no longer the volatile, unsafe area that a lot of safer investors thought it would be. I think it's really coming of age.
Yeah. I basically I bought Ethereum and Bitcoin and all that and a couple of others. But then all I did was look down at the smallest they list on Coinbase, and I do think there's still the valuations are crazy. You know, the smallest on Coinbase is now New Cypher, 158 million market cap. Like, I don't hold any stocks actually in my ISA account. It's that size, and that's the smallest you can get on Coinbase. And I'm thinking these companies, they don't have any revenue, or anything at all whatsoever. I mean, apart from it's the future, of course, they're all the future. But it's like, it is a bit insane. Part of me thinks we need a 95% sell off in crypto. And I hold a little bit, so I mean.
Well, I think there's always that argument. Yeah, you know, there's always that risk because, you know, it defies fundamentals on so many levels. Other than, on the one hand, you've got this, and now, of course, you've got NFT developments. You know, which are, and we've spoken about NFTs, and you know, which is crazier, cryptocurrency or non-fungible tokens? You tell me.
Well, do you know what? I've actually combined the two there. So I bought a company. What's it called? Which one is it? It's Engine Coin. And they've done a deal with Samsung about non-fungible tokens. They're going to store it.
Engine Coin.
Yeah. And they've done a deal with Samsung, though. So I thought, that's quite big, isn't it? So I just put a bit of money into this. But I put some money in and then looked at the chart. And I thought, oh, hang on a sec. Because I can't get to, you know, some of these are available on TradingView. But I looked at the chart. If I bought this, like literally, in February, it'd be 0.3, it'd be 38 pence. And then it shot up to 2.92. And now it's down at 194. So it's literally, it's more than 20 bagged already. It's ridiculous. I don't know where the end is going to come, but there's a lot of support around it now. But it's just a little bit insane, these valuations. I can't get over it. I know people say, well, that's it, it's crypto, though. I just don't understand how we can value these like this, you know?
Well, I suppose fundamentally, in a market, in markets there are buyers and sellers, and all the time you've got more people buying, is going to drive the value of that asset up, and the increased popularity of crypto, the fact that crypto accounts are paying you interest on the coins that you hold, is attracting a lot of investors, and that's why the prices are going up, because there are more buyers and sellers. So eventually, someone might say, do you know what? This looks crazy. I can't see where the value is. So I'm going to sell out. And people start to move out, but we've seen that so many times. We've seen big sell-offs already, and we've seen it come back. And there was a big sell-off in Bitcoin over the weekend, and I'm sure it's going to come back.
Yeah. So I'm looking at other sort of companies in the space there. They're correlated with the Engine Coin. Engine Coin is 1.6 billion market cap. There's other ones in that area, Decentraland, that's 1.4 billion. There's VeChain, which has got quite hot recently. That's 11.3 billion. I think, what the heck? It's like when Coinbase listed, it was like bigger than BP. It's nuts, isn't it? Anyway, yeah. I just think it's got to blow up soon or later, I think. I don't know why. I think it's going to have a massive sell-off or something. Something's going to happen. I don't understand it. It's just craziness. It's actually
I mean, with Bitcoin, you can understand, okay, so there's a way of transacting directly there outside of the financial system, and I can pay you in Bitcoin, and if I'm buying something from you and vice versa.
You'd never do that with Bitcoin, would you? Because it's like so volatile. You pay for something now, and you realize in 6 months' time, you've pretty much, if you held on to the Bitcoin, what you paid for, you paid double, 100 grand's worth or whatever, the Bitcoin, so you wouldn't...
Well, I think if you're looking to make that transaction, so let's say, for example, you've got
Bitcoin
the funding...
Bitcoin's never going to be a currency, though, unless it really slows down and stops being volatile, because it'd be insane to buy anything with Bitcoin now, because you don't know what it's going to be worth in about 2 months' time, you know?
But no, my point is using Bitcoin to pay for stuff. So if you've got a lot of money in your Bitcoin account and you're thinking buying something, you think, well, I don't want to sort of break into my eyes or anything. I know what I'll pay for on Bitcoin. You can actually pay for it, and the transaction will go through there and then.
Would you?
So
that person who first transaction on Bitcoin was like a burger, wasn't it? And now that burger's worth about burger's now worth about 100 grand at what they paid for it. So I wish I just kept the Bitcoin. So it's an asset, but it's not a currency. I mean, it can be used, it's like gold. You wouldn't, buy stuff with gold. But I suppose it is more accessible these days than gold. It's like, why wouldn't it be the new gold? Because it's so easy to buy compared to gold. Gold is heavy. You can't got to store it somewhere. So of course, I think it is the new gold. Really, I think it's a new asset class like that. Younger people are more likely to hold Bitcoin than gold, aren't they? You know.
Oh yeah, very much so. But it is, it's the new digital gold, isn't it? You know, it's just easier for everyone to hold it, and it's also very accessible too. And the fact you can earn interest on it, you know, why wouldn't you? Most people I know, or most youngsters I know, certainly have an interest in Bitcoin and or hold some sort of cryptocurrency.
Marvelous. Okay, what's Ananda then? What's happening with Ananda?
So Ananda, okay, well, it's moving forward slowly. So there are three key strings to Ananda's bow, as it were, of course they are their stated aim is to become a significant participant in the UK medicinal cannabis field. There are now more than 37,000 cannabis-based products imported into the UK in 2020, compared to a tenth of that the previous year. So we're seeing a lot of growth in products coming in. Patients are growing at 20% plus per month. And of course, as we know, it's well documented, cannabis or cannabis products are used to treat pain, anxiety, depression, neurological disorders, and so on. Ananda has, as I say, three key developments. Firstly, it owns 180 shares in a company called ICAN, which is short for Israel Cannabis. The company is a medical cannabis incubator and conference company. Of course, COVID has really paid a lot to a lot of their conferences organized. So they ran a lot of online conferences to basically fill in the gap, as it were. They will shortly be relaunching, obviously, once lockdown's lifted. They own also 15% of a company called Liberty Herbal Technologies. And I think I've said this before. This was launched at Peterhouse, and I actually sat in on this and had a look at this product. A company called HAPAC, H-A-P-A-C. It's a vaping product, what's called a dry herb vaporizer. So this little blue device, you basically insert what can best be described as a mini tea bag, and you vape it or smoke it. So I guess in a sense you are smoking cannabis, but it's a vaping product. They're developing this product and looking to launch in the US. Melissa Sturgis, who of course is well known as a CEO and an investor and entrepreneur, is also on the board of Liberty Herbal Tech, as well as being the CEO of Ananda Developments. But the key drive and the primary project for Ananda, is a joint venture it's undertaken with JEPCO Marketing, DJT Plants Limited, which is a cannabis farm that or a growing facility in Leicestershire, which has received all of the approvals it needs from the Home Office, but it still needs a site visit, which of course the Home Office can't conduct because of COVID. But we're getting very close to that that being approved, and. The company, Ananda, has raised $300,000 from a couple of investors to fund the first phase of developing this growing facility, which includes building a 2,000 square meter greenhouse, what's called a modular breeding facility, and also security and monitoring system for the facility in Leicestershire. So we're waiting to hear more on that. There's a significant shareholder called Rupert Williams who owns 5%, and he was one of the two investors who funded phase one of this. And of course, the shares, you were saying earlier, they're Aquas traded, currently trading at 1p, which gives the company a market cap of just under 6 million. But I'm sure any further news and developments on any of those three investments will push this higher. So that's the state of play with Ananda. We'll take a look, and I think it's a good opportunity to get a good spread of risk across this new and exciting sector.
Yeah, I'll have to discover where my thing is here, my stock is, where it is. Marvellous. Yeah, it's you know, it's good to have. That's why basically I got a foothold in it, because I know medicinal cannabis is quite a hot sector. I don't know much about it, and I also in crypto. Just might as well have a bit of exposure to it. You never know, because not too much, but just enough, you know. So yeah, hopefully it'll go somewhere. Right, and I found out it's in Jarvis. My account is with Jarvis. I'd have to sort of
Jarvis. Yeah. I have an account there too. Well, I've got an account through TS Capital, the broker. My stockbroker basically uses the Jarvis backend.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah. The settlements and backend system.
Yeah. Is Jarvis happy with that? Jarvis?
Well, yes, he's right. He seems very accommodating.
but lots of people use him. Right, yes. Marvellous stuff. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Cheers, Jarvis. Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Infrastrata. At four, Argo Blockchain. Where's Infrastrata? It's down 4.17%, that's 46 pence. Argo Blockchain up a smidge to 170, up 1.1%. Bit of a sell-off in the cryptos over the weekend. At three, Helium One, 18.84%, up to 13.5. At two, Chamberlain PLC, up 2.7% at 9.5. And at one, iNexus, up again 14% to 11.13. Big rise on Friday as well. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs, and they are as follows. At five, Gene Drive, Public Health, of course, England, Network, National Framework Agreement there. At four, Remote Monitor Systems, Board Appointments. At three, Gritland Gold, Scallywag Drill Results. At two, Supply Acme Capital, Acquisition Update. And at one, Omega Diagnostics, shareholding. And that's, I think, was that a sell? Let me just check there. Have you read that right? Yeah, the Group Strategic Sourcing Director sold 14,673 shares at 95 pence. It doesn't matter if one or two, directors sell. There's always personal reasons for sales. If they all start selling, that's a bit of a worry. But that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.